Hello, and welcome to Speak On It, History and Genealogy Conversations with Janice and Sharicana. We invite you to join us on Thursdays at 8 p.m. for an engaging exchange with us and our special guest as we cover various topics regarding history, genealogy, and your personal family history stories. Hello, I'm Janice Gilliard.
And I'm Sharicana Feliciano. Welcome to Speak On It, History and Genealogy Conversations with Janice and Sharicana. Thank you for joining us. And don't forget, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Today, we are joined by our guest, Cheryl Wills.
Cheryl Wills is a nationally recognized award-winning television personality for New York One News, located in New York City. She is also the host of the talk show In Focus with Cheryl Wills. Cheryl is very passionate about family history, and she's an author of several books on this topic. She also regularly presents at schools regarding her family history. Welcome to Speak On It, Cheryl.
Janice and Sharicana, what a thrill to be with you on this podcast. And you sisters speak my language. I am so excited to chat with you today.
We love it. We love it. Thank you so much for joining us on Speak On It. We're looking forward to having this conversation with you. So let's go ahead and get started. What inspired you to research your family history? And I have to ask this because you grew up in New York City and I have some familiarity with your background. Are you connected to the Great Migration? And if so, where in the South did they come from?
Yes, I am absolutely connected to the Great Migration. Sharicana, I'm so glad you asked that because I would not be in New York City were it not for the Great Migration on both sides of my family. But let me start with your first question. What inspired me to start digging deep into my family roots was my father was a New York City fireman, and he was killed in a motorcycle accident when I was 13 years old. And no one in our family ever really talked about family history or family roots. We all lived in Queens, New York, but I sensed there was something more to what I saw every day. I'm a true city kid, but I would look at my grandparents and I knew they were from the South, but they didn't really go too deep into what happened. And then when my father died, I opened his funeral program and it said Brownsville, Tennessee. And I was like, where on earth is that? My father never for a second talked about growing up in the Jim Crow South in the 1940s. And so that put me on a path. Who was the family that was left behind? And then when I looked at my mother's side, my grandma was from Greenville, South Carolina. My grandfather on my mother's side was a World War I veteran who served in a segregated unit. He was born in a Jim Crow town in Florida, Jacksonville, Florida. And my paternal side was Haywood County, Tennessee. Everyone walked through Jim Crow. Everyone got on the migration train to the North, and no one said a peep about it. And, you know, as a kid, you know, all of the education that we now have that's right at our fingertips, it wasn't at our fingertips in the 1980s, right? If you didn't have someone like a griot who told you the family history, you probably were not going to know. So it was my natural curiosity after my father's funeral to learn more about my family's transition from the South during the Great Migration.
That's so powerful. Cheryl, as a published author, please share with our listeners a snippet of each ancestor you have written about.
Absolutely. So that leads right into that, right? So the ancestor who, you know, they're all precious. They're all powerful. Both of you have incredible stories as well. Yes. But there's always one that stands out, right? And for me, that standout ancestor is Sandy Wills, who was born in the very same town as my father in 1840. He was purchased as a slave by Edmund Wills. And I have all the documentation. You know, this is all about documentation, right? I have all the documentation showing that he was purchased by Edmund Wills. And may I remind you, ladies, I'm Cheryl Wills. It is not entirely unique, but it is somewhat rare that I am carrying the same last name of the man who purchased my grandfather at auction nearly 200 years ago.
That's right.
That is somewhat rare. It's not entirely, you know, but we are a very small group, of course, because over the decades, people get married, names change, people change, and so forth. And of course, we know that many enslaved Africans after the Civil War actually dropped their surnames and they wanted to start fresh. So the fact that the name has kept through all of these generations is pretty impressive. And so Sandy Wills, my standout ancestor, if you will, ended up leaving the plantation and running away from Haywood County, Tennessee, and joined President Lincoln's army. He joined the United States Colored Troops in 1863 with the other men, boys. So many of them were 18, seven, or even younger. And I have all of their enlistment records. Together, they went as a group and joined the United States Colored Troops and fought for the Union Army from 1863 until the conclusion of the war in 1865. So Janice, my books center around Private Sandy Wills. And may I add that it's revenge for me to write these books, because when I went through PS 183, PS 225, junior high school 180, and all the way through Syracuse University, I heard not a word, not a word about the United States Colored Troops and the 200,000 Black men, most of whom were enslaved, who helped turn the tide of that critical war that helped America redefine itself. It makes me angry. If I could speak freely, y'all said speak on it. So I'm going to speak on it. It makes me angry to think that these men have been whitewashed from the Civil War. And to think I was sitting in classrooms learning about the Civil War. A little girl there, a descendant, a direct descendant of a Civil War soldier, and no one even dared to look at the brown girls and boys and think, oh, maybe you could have a tie into America's amazing history.
That's all true.
I was invisible. And so that's why I wrote those books, to let the children know you are part of this country's history. When they teach it to you, find your family's place in it. And to your wonderful title of this podcast, speak on it right in the classroom.
Ooh, a word.
Oh my gosh. Now, where can I send my donation?
That was a word. And to your point about their ages, you know, my my ancestor that fought in the Civil War was the same thing. He would have been about 15 or 16. Yep. He was a young boy.
Yeah.
And, you know, at that age, he understood the importance of it and, you know, did what he felt he needed to do. And I'm so thankful for that.
Jerikana, I trust you've been to the African American Civil War Museum in Washington, D.C.
I have not yet.
We're going. We're going because we both have Civil War ancestors.
Yes,
so we're going to go.
Okay. So it is imperative that you go there, because you will find your ancestors' name on their wall. That museum, which I am closely affiliated with, I have donated, you talk about donations, I have donated proceeds from my children's books, go to that wonderful museum. It is a national museum run by the Parks Department, and your ancestors' names are inscribed on that wall. So I encourage you and anyone within the sound of my voice who have ancestors that fought in that Civil War, go to the African American Civil War Museum in the nation's capital.
I definitely will. Thank you for that. You're absolutely right. You are absolutely right. It is something that really should be a mandatory thing. Reminds me again, Janice is always referencing Kanika Marshall, our previous guest, who said, you know, this is a mandate.
Yes.
And what you just said was also a mandate. So received.
Yes. And you're not far.
You're right about that.
You don't even have to get on the plane if you don't want to.
You're right. So speaking of recent guests, we recently interviewed Ethan West on Speak On It, who we discovered is related to you. Yes. Can you explain to us how the two of you are connected and what are some of the genealogy discoveries that the two of you have made or other relationships that have come out of your collective research?
Sure. My cousin Ethan is a hero. He's a hero in the family. I did not grow up knowing Ethan because, you know, to link back to the Black migration, when our families left the South, many families broke apart. Not all, but I know mine did. And we lost touch with all of the different arteries connected to our ancestors who were enslaved. That's how I never knew Ethan. His branch of the family went to Ohio. My branch of the family went to New York, and we never met. So when I made very public online that I have found my hero grandfather, Sandy Wills, who fought in the Civil War, one of his cousins found me via Ancestry.com. Excuse me, one of our cousins, his sister, found me. And when she found me, we were both connected to Sandy's wife, Emma. Then Ethan chimed in and he was enthralled by it. And so together we started to rekindle our family relationship. So Ethan took the discovery to the next level, because I never in a million years, ladies, could have imagined that that plantation where my Civil War grandfather and his wife Emma lived was still standing.
Wow.
If you had asked me, I would have assumed, I would even joke about it in speeches. I would say, I'm sure there's a Walmart on wherever they lived, because here I live in New York, where all of just about all of the slave legacy has been paved over, and there
completely
are skyscrapers, right? Our famous Central Park was once a Black community. So, you know, they just paved over it with no regard and boom. So I assumed that happened in the South. How wrong was I? Ethan was the one who got in his car and left Ohio and physically went back to Haywood County, Tennessee. And we were in discussion. And I said, man, I don't know what you're going to find, but let me know if you find anything. And he said, I will, cuz I'm just going to go poke around. And I said, well, you go ahead. He starts poking around and he finds the exact plantation where they live. You could have blown me. Not only did he find the plantation, it is still owned by the same family. Not only is it still owned by the same family, ladies, there is still one house standing, and it appears to have been lived in by our ancestors. And to add the cherry on top, there is a burial ground on that land where we believe, we have every reason to believe, through meticulous documentation and research, that my Civil War grandfather, Sandy Wills, he died there, is buried there. His wife, Emma, who was born there, is there. A host of our family members from the 19th century are buried there. Once I found that out, I said, Ethan, we have really come upon something. It took some time, but we found the family. And of course, in fairness to them, I always try to think of the, put myself in the other person's shoes, right? Exactly. I know some people want me to be gangsta and go in with guns blazing. That gets you nowhere. I had to be diplomatic. These people don't know me from Adam. I had to, and Ethan had to as well, take very careful steps and say to them, your family property is part of our family legacy. And we need to inspect it. And we are hunting for our family's remains. So here's where we are, to answer your question very quickly. We have finally, and it took years of negotiation and discussion, which we are actually currently still in. But I told them, I said, I need to, with an archaeologist based out of Columbus, Ohio, called Ohio Valley Archaeology. I need this land to be cleared. Right now, it only has trees and leaves. The family, the white family, had been told, don't you ever touch anything on this hill. Can you believe? And they've obeyed. They respected it. They treated it as sacred ground. So I said, Ethan and I are now here, and we have an archaeologist, and we are going to give this archaeologist our DNA, and we want him to go grave by grave until we find our family. I specifically want to find Private Sandy Wills, who served this country and was not buried with honor. Once he is found along with his wife, he, with the blessing of the United States military, will be removed and reburied in Memphis National Cemetery with full honors that he deserved and should have received in 1889 when he died. So that's the link. And I am very proudly on this journey and will not rest until I find the remains of Private Sandy Wills, my great, great, great grandfather.
And he wants to be found, and he's calling. Yeah. That call is there. They want to be found. Ethan spoke, he made a post on Facebook, and he talked about standing on that property. And then all of a sudden, there was this wind that came through. And I'm convinced that the spirit of our ancestors, when we enter those spaces that they have walked, survived, were resilient in, that we do feel their presence, whether it's through the wind, whether it's through the sun shining a different way, it does happen. That's so powerful. I'm trying to like compose myself, because every word that you were saying, I felt it. I felt it, and it's powerful. But again, I strongly believe that for all of us that are searching, that the ancestors are calling out for us to research them where they have not been spoken about, to research, to look for them, and then to tell their stories. And I love what you're doing. It's amazing.
Janet, if I could just jump in before you hop to your next question. You just touched my heart so deeply, because when I descended on that land, Ethan went the first time and he would relay back to me. And then finally I went with him. Janice, when I stepped foot on that land, I could have damn near passed out, because I felt my family, hundreds of years removed, had appointed me. See, not many people will understand this. Mm-hmm. There's a part of this where you got to understand through the spirit and not through the carnal. And if you can't get with the carnal, then dismiss me. But for those who can understand the spirit, I felt the wind say, now, very good, you finally made it. Here's what we have to do. We have made it so nothing on this land will be touched until our family arrives. Mm. And I felt the weight of the responsibility. This was not just a genealogical hobby. This was an assignment from the ancestors.
That's right.
Nothing here will be touched or moved until our appointed children come. And when I walked in, I could see the rows of cotton where they planted. And right now, sisters, I know you can't see me. This is an audio podcast, but I keep the cotton from that land right on my desk where I sit for hours a day. And I just touch it because I said, this is the resurrection, the regeneration of the cotton they planted. So I am touching the seeds that they planted. So to your point, Janice, thank you for saying that. I have tears in my eyes. This is not a hobby. This is an assignment.
Yeah. If Kanitha or Kathy Marshall were here, and Dr. Evelyn McDowell, Dr. Evelyn McDowell always says, this work is spiritual. This work is spiritual. And then as Shirakana said, Kanika says, it's not a goal, it's a mandate, and we're called. And some people, they do it for a hobby and they don't feel anything. And then there are some of us, we do it and we feel, we sense, we know that they are with us and that they want us to do exactly what we're doing.
That's right.
Moving on, and this is really difficult to move on because there are just so many different responses to this. And I feel like I'm at a church service because this is powerful. It is spiritual. It's deeply spiritual.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
We understand that you speak in schools on a regular basis.
Yes.
How do you use your family history to empower students you make presentations to?
Yes, and I speak at schools. And, you know, I have discovered through my 10-year journey now, 10 plus years, that American schools are still deeply segregated.
Yes.
And so I speak, especially in New York City.
Yes.
And I speak to all Black schools and I'll speak to all white schools. And the message is the same. Our history has been tampered with, and allow the children of oppressed people to give the narrative. It's one thing when scholars look and piece things together, but these scholars are literally saying, oh, slavery had little to do with the Civil War. I take offense to that.
I know.
I take full offense to that. And that's why I think it's critically important when I present before these schools to stand as a representative of a Civil War soldier. This doesn't walk into the classroom every day, ladies. And that's why I'm so glad to have found this, because this has set me on another path. I'm on television every night. I have my own Sunday morning talk show. I am very busy, but you best to believe I carve time out of my day to go to every public school that will invite me all year round. We don't just wait for Black History Month, because as far as I'm concerned, Black History Month is 365 days a year, not just 28 days a year, but I digress. I go into these schools and I teach the children on behalf of a Civil War soldier. Janice and Cherokana, it is the greatest honor and privilege of my life. I'm married to a principal.
Wow.
And I take him with me when he's off sometimes to these schools. And I do a PowerPoint presentation, Janice, to answer your question. I do a PowerPoint. I put the enlistment record of Sandy Wills up on a big screen. I put the pension records of his wife, Emma, when she had to fight the United States government, a former illiterate slave, hired a lawyer and told the mighty U.S. government, you are not going to render me silent. And I provide proof positive. And that way, ladies, and I'm sure you can appreciate this, this is my way of saying there's things, students, that have been left out of your history books. And let me fill in all the blanks, because they're going to teach you more about the Confederate soldiers than they are about the Black soldiers. So let me stand here as a representative so you get a full and complete picture of what happened. So I'm a journalist, I'm an author, and proudly now also a teacher.
Wonderful. That is beautiful. That's a beautiful testament. And I'm glad you also mentioned about New York City schools. Yeah. Segregation. It's something that I don't think a lot of people realize, because it's a northern city and people don't equate, you know, segregation with the North, but it is absolutely a segregated city. And I guess anecdotally, I remember growing up, I did live in Queens at one point, but I used to live in Harlem as a child. Mm-hmm. And before pre-gentrification, we used to have this joke on a 2 and 3 train. This was the red line that ran like to Lenox Avenue. And, you know, you would start maybe downtown, midtown, it would be a mixed crowd. And then all of us kind of Black folks in Harlem knew that by about 86th Street, it was going to be, after that, an all Black train. Yeah. So, you know, so you would see all the white folks kind of like, you know, leave the station. And then as gentrification started to happen, you start to see people creep up to 110th, 116th and so forth. But that is kind of an example of how, you know, separate you know, New York City could be. It was like two different worlds. So,
and still is.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So you mentioned, you know, you are a journalist. So in your professional career, are there opportunities to discuss your family history?
Oh, absolutely. I don't know if I sent it to Janice, but I have been featured in the Daily News, and CBS News did a piece on me. I've presented with Ken Burns, the great historian and documentarian,
yes.
And he actually has a Civil War soldier in his family. And, you know, Ken Burns is very liberal, and he was shocked to learn that he had a Confederate soldier in his family tree. So yeah. I did an event together. I represented the Union and he represented the Confederate soldiers. And I do, as a journalist, also share this from time to time. And as I embark on this journey, I can't say who yet, but a major network, major national network is coming back with me to Tennessee. We are going.
Oh, exciting.
Yeah, this is beyond major. And I can't release it publicly, but they are coming back with me to it's known as the plantation in Haywood County, Tennessee. And they're okay. going to document as we go step by step, because this lady's is extraordinary.
Yeah.
Search for a Black Civil War soldier buried without honor, buried without markers on a private farm's hill.
Yeah.
And we're going to actually document step by step the ground penetrating radar, the DNA process, and it's going to be really a piece of history.
That is really exciting.
Very exciting. Something amazing took place, and you just touched on it a moment ago. Something amazing took place in 2011 at the mm-hmm. National Archives with you and documentary filmmaker Kim Burns. Yeah. Please share with us what you experienced. And I did watch, mm-hmm. I watched some of that last night, and it was very, very, very powerful.
Yeah, what an honor to go back to the National Archives. That's where all of our documentation is, and it has now been fully uploaded, but they just started uploading it really in the last 15 years. And, you know, our family histories are right there in the National Archives. All of our families who served in the military, our families in the United States Census. And once they put all of this precious documentation online and made it, you know, accessible digitally, well, that was life-changing for us. You know, I don't think this government fully appreciated how they were helping African Americans rediscover their lost lineage by uploading all of those documents. I would bet you dollar to donuts they weren't thinking of us at all when they did it, but they have changed lives. They have changed my life by doing that. And to be in the National Archives and to see their vaults and to see just, I mean, the building is massive. And this is like the National Library. Mm-hmm. And to be there with Kim Burns, of all people, was just an honor that I will never forget.
That is a big deal. That's awesome. And before we get to the next question, I have to say, I grew up watching you. I remember you on mm-hmm. New York One. And I just want to ask, like, what did inspire you to become a journalist?
Oh, sure. You know, my natural, I would say for probably most journalists, your natural curiosity and your love yes. of just telling, you know, blasting what's happening in the world. And what I used to do as a kid, you know, I would read every newspaper I could get my hands on. I would rewrite the articles in my voice. And I still have some of my old loose leaf notebooks, especially.
Oh my goodness.
I was doing it and people paid no attention to it. Of course, it was just something I would naturally do. But when I look back at that, I'm like, wow, my future career was solidly being expressed, because I was 6, 7, 8 years old, rewriting newspaper articles, gluing them in a loose leaf notebook, reading them into a tape recorder, and interviewing anybody that would let me. And one of the biggest interviews I did, and I didn't appreciate archiving when I was a kid, but I interviewed my World War One grandfather.
Oh my.
Yeah. And I mean, I can't find on the old cassette tapes, you know. And he talked to me about the humiliation of being, see, we know the World War II soldiers were humiliated. They're well mm-hmm. documented and their stories have been well told. Mm-hmm. But those World War One Black soldiers mm-hmm. really went through it. And he explained to me how, you know, the name calling and the overt, not subvert, overt discrimination, and, you know, calling them the end soldiers, just out loud without any kind of, you know, and you got to stand there and take it like it's your name and being called boy and not being given the same. I mean, it was unbelievable. And so I was always interested in how did we come to be, ladies? You know what I mean? Like, how did we get here? And from a child's perspective, I was innocently like, why does everybody like bully us? Like, what the hell did we do? You know, that's a 9-10 year old talking. So I tried to make sense of the world I lived in through journalism. And I'm very grateful that I followed up and never let it go. So that was my inspiration.
Before we move to the next question, going back to the event at the National Archives, can you share a little bit? You were talking about one of the young men that was with your ancestor, and his last name was Parker, and why he ended up with the last name Parker. I thought that was so powerful.
Wasn't it powerful? So my grandfather, like I said, enlisted with all the young men who were at the plantation in his age range. Mm-hmm. And when they enlisted, and I got all of their records, it cost me thousands. I said, give me everything, not only in Sandy Wills's file, but I want James, Andy, Mac, Dick, and Richard, because they were all really close and they grew up as children on the Wills plantation in Haywood County, Tennessee. And when I saw and examined every file in Dick Parker's file, the first thing that struck me was, why did he enlist as Dick Parker? And then when I started going page by page, I mean, I did meticulous research. I saw in his, and of course, the government also asked him when he tried to get his pension, we have you as Dick Wills in some places, and now on your enlistment record, you're Dick Parker. What gives? We're confused.
Right.
We're not giving you anything until you straighten this out. And he explained in a firm voice in his pension document. He said, my mother named me Dick Parker. When Wills bought me, he changed my last name to Wills, but I never forgot that my mother named me for my father. So the moment I enlisted, I considered myself emancipated and reverted back to the name my mother gave me. I was like, whoa.
Wow.
The reason that was so profound was because these men who were born into slavery are often portrayed as weak and scared. And that flies in the face of the ugly stereotype of you know, the scared Black man. This man was firm. He was proud. He was laser focused. And he said, I'm taking back my name first as soon as I enlist in this army. And I was like, wow. My grandfather didn't do that.
That gave me goosebumps.
My grandfather didn't do that.
When I saw that, I said, you have to share that. She's got to share that.
Thank you for allowing me to share that. And you know, his brother, his blood brother, they enlisted as a group, but they were not all blood. You know, they all bought by at different lots, right? Tragically. So his brother was James Wills. And even he didn't take back his name. His brother also named him James Parker. Right.
Wow.
So what Dick Parker did by taking back his name that his mother gave him, I can't wait until we do the movie. That's going to be one of the critical scenes because it shows that he took a stand for his own identity and this country be damned for trying to relegate him to a slave with someone else's name.
That is amazing. That gave me goosebumps. And you know, and that's also a testament to doing thorough research in the pension files and the pension records, because if you hadn't ordered those records and you hadn't gone through it, you wouldn't have known that. And that is, I mean, we've had a couple of guests and other like friends in genealogy who are always talking about the importance of pension files and, you know, the things that you can find in those records. That's an amazing story.
There are gems. I assume you guys are going to get to Emma. I know that's one of your questions.
You can talk about her now, but before you get to Emma, if Bernice Bennett, that she was the one who transitioned her podcast to us. If she were here right now, she'd be jumping up and down. Into the National Herd Program research at the National Archives and beyond. And she talks all the time about get the records, look at the pension files, Fortunately, I have one, and it's 150 pages, and it took me hours to read through it, and it was so emotional in that my ancestor, it took him almost until the end of his life to be able to get his pension, and how he had to travel and get affidavits to say, I thought, I'm like, you serve the country, and then they make you go through all of this.
They to did get, that to all the Black, they did it to Black people only. They didn't really do it to white people. And they did it to my grandma, Emma. And it makes me mad even today. Most of them had to hire lawyers, my grandmother notwithstanding. And they gave them a hard time. And they tried to blame them for not having proper birth records. And it's just like, are you really blaming the victim, people who were exploited and enslaved against their will? Are you really, you alleged educated people, are you really blaming the exploited lot?
It's wild.
Your crimes? You have turned this around and made them the victims and the perpetrators at the same time?
Right.
Break with that. So they made them. Okay, well, we're finding all kinds of discrepancies, and you can't do this and you can't do that. So we're not giving you a pension because you're probably lying. And my grandma, Emma, she is, you know, my last book has one title. They, you know, when I was dealing with the publisher, they were like, maybe we should call. I said, no, just Emma. Because she was a force to be reckoned with. They did this to Emma after her Civil War husband died. And ladies, when I went through her pension documents, she applied for a widow's pension. I love to tell this story. I know we're getting short on time, but I'll be quick about it.
You're good.
And she did not allow this government, the U.S. Pension Bureau, to wipe her away and say, you're denied, now get out of our face. Mm-hmm. And you can imagine quite a few people did. I could see some of the men that served with my grandpa Sandy. Their files are very small. And I could tell, I said, you didn't want to deal with their nonsense.
Yeah.
When they came at you sideways, you being sadly illiterate, no fault of your own, no fault of their own. But you were like, I'm not doing this. I'm not playing this game. There are a lot of people like that that'll just say, to hell with you. And then there are others who will say, okay, you want to fight? You got to bring it in your hands.
Right.
And I mean, this is the time when, you know, Jim Crow was just being born, you know, and my grandma, Emma, even though she was born into a world of illiteracy, her husband died when she was pregnant with her ninth child. When she realized through the white people who still befriended her, the owners of that plantation helped her. Joe Moore, who is the great, great uncle of the people I'm dealing with right now.
Wow.
He helped her and filed affidavits when this government said, get out of here. No, we have a name discrepancy. You see, they misspelled Sandy's name Willis, like they still do with me today. Cheryl Willis, and I'm just like, it's Wills. But this era is hundreds of years old. Can you take the extra eye out? So they did that with my grandpa Sandy. They enlisted him as Willis, Sandy Willis. He knew it was a mistake. He went to the county while he was alive, filed an oath of identity, filed an oath, which was on file when I opened the file. They acted like they didn't see it. They were like, oh, you say you're Emma Wills. You say your husband is Sandy Wills. But we have here that he enlisted as Sandy Willis. So by discrepancy, died. She was like, oh, okay. She hired a lawyer.
Game on.
Mm-hmm. She hired a lawyer. And you could see how she gave oral depositions. Wow. Sisters, can you hear my grandmother's voice coming through a computer screen?
Yes.
More than 100 years later, explaining her life. I met Sandy when he came out of the army. We married. We did this. I was like, it's like my grandma Emma is talking to me.
And Emma is speaking through you to us.
What a treasure.
To all of us.
Thank you. And she said Joel Moore was at my wedding. And she put, we even got married right in the quote, white folks house. She's talking about the white Moors that I'm still dealing with, their descendants that I'm dealing with right now. Look, so she that. Was closely connected to them. I'm not saying in any way that she fell into agreement with slavery or those who oppressed her, but right. she was sophisticated enough, as so many of our ancestors were. They were like, we're in an impossible situation here. These people are self-righteous, sociopathic liars who yeah. think God told them that they had a right to own and strip us. So we're going to beat them at their own game. I resent people who want to say, oh, well, the slaves, if you look, they were so happy and they were part of the family. No, no, no. They were strategic. They were strategic. Right. Don't you dare say that these innocent people who were being exploited were happy with their lot. No, the hell they weren't. But they were smart right. enough to know that you can win more by with honey than you can with vinegar. And they right. just spread honey on a jacked up situation to ensure their survival. It doesn't mean they fell into agreement. Emma didn't That's agree right. with what happened to her.
Right. right. Making a way out of no That's way. Right. Making
they
a, way
a way out of no way. Way. Don't you disparage those Africans who were placed in the pit of hell in this country and say, oh, but they were, I mean, if you look at the record, no. I take mm-hmm. full offense to that. Would yep. you be happy? We could flip this around real quick. Would exactly. you be happy?
Exactly.
So, you know, and it's, go ahead, honey.
Go ahead. Continue, well, please.
I'll just finish very quickly. Emma hired a lawyer with the help of Joel Moore, and she fought for her pension. Mm-hmm. And they went back and forth for more than a year. And they kept saying to her, what documents can you provide? And she really had none. And she did have her wedding certificate, but there was even an error on that.
Mm.
But Sandy Williams, Emma Moore. And of course, you know, they couldn't tell it was an error because they were illiterate.
Yeah.
So everything that she did, but I'll tell you, sisters, what she did do. And then I want to hear more of your questions. Emma did something remarkable. When her first child was born, she had Joel Moore write in her Bible, please write the name of my son, William Wills, and the day he was born. Please write in this Bible. Can you imagine my grandmother clutching a Bible that she couldn't read?
Wow.
Imagine my grandmother determined to have her new family history documented, even though she was like feeling through the dark, unable mm-hmm. to even sign her name. All of those pension documents, sisters, she signed with an X.
Mm.
They would write her name for her and put Emma Wills her mark. And I would see her X in the middle. And she was determined, though, to stake a claim in her own family and That's start right. a legacy of literacy. So she had Joel Moore write William Wills and his birthday. Then she had her second son, Alex Wills, who's my great-great-grandfather, September 20th, 1871. Mm-hmm. And then all nine of her children. And when the government was about to close the books on her case, she said, I have one piece of evidence that is indisputable. Bible, and Joel Moore, a white man, documented everything in it to prove that these children are in fact the legal heirs of this Civil War soldier. And the government saw that combined with Joel Moore's affidavit and gave her her pension for herself and her nine children for the rest of her life. So I don't have one hero in my family. I got two heroes in my family.
Yeah, what Andy a
Wills
woman.
Wills was the military hero and Emma Wills was a hero too.
And what Cheryl woman. And Emma are speaking together right now.
That's right. I mean, you really just gave us such a fascinating story and a narrative, and you really brought it to life. And how, oh, I can't even, and I was just thinking as you're talking about, like, you mentioned the birth records too, before I get to my next question, because you talked about how they couldn't produce the birth records. They would use that against them.
Yeah.
And something I learned in my family research is that how messed up that is, because the government knew birth record, not everyone got birth records, especially the enslaved. And I found letters. My great aunt gave me a stack of just papers. I didn't know what it was. And at some point, I see all these letters between my great grandmother and my great grandfather and his mother, and a few people in that household writing back and forth with the Department of Commerce, saying, like, asking for a birth record or some kind of proof of where they, when they were born. And I started to realize this is because they didn't have a birth record. You know, yeah. It's something we take for granted now, right? You're born, you get the birth record, your mother gets it, and you have it. But that was not always the case. And so, you know, for the government to kind of use that as evidence against them is just, like, so foul. But, you know, it's a testament also to something Janice always mentions, is the resilience of our ancestors, for sure. So, on this topic of the Civil War, we note that you are the newly designated commander and lifetime descendant member of the New York chapter of the Sons and Daughters of the United States Colored Troops. So we want to congratulate you. And also, if you could just tell us more about the society and why becoming a part of it is important to you.
Well, first of all, I invite both of you to join our ranks.
Yes.
As I continue, as my journey gets higher profile, I'm going to invest more in this organization, the Sons and Daughters of the United States Colored Troops. We're everywhere, but many of us don't even know that we have ancestors that fought in the Civil War. So I encourage you to join. I encourage anyone within the sound of my voice to join, because we have meetings. We do get together at the African American Civil War Memorial and Museum in Washington, D.C., and to exchange information and to reunite under the umbrella of these brave 200,000 men is one of the most beautiful things you can experience. You know, there's an organization called the Daughters of the American Revolution. I know you're both familiar with them. Mm-hmm. And they are extremely proud of their roots dating back to the Revolution, and rightly so. We should be proud too. The Civil War was a turning point. America was reborn after that war. And that's if right. It had not happened and ended the way it should have happened, this country would look very different. That war was everything. It was a seminal moment. So if you are a descendant of one of these brave soldiers, that's a badge of honor.
That's okay? Right.
It is a badge of honor. So through this organization, to answer your question, I visit schools. This is part of my duty as the chair, president of the New York chapter of the Sons and Daughters of the United States Colored Troops, where I encourage more people to join me and to be at public events and to present yourself before these schools. And this is education also. So yeah. I am so proud to do it. And I plan to have more New York events. We give out awards to genealogists. Ruth Hunt, you know Ruth Hunt.
Yes.
She is a recipient of one of our awards. And we had the pandemic, of course, put a dent in it, but we're going to come back very strong, especially with all the work I'm doing now. So I'm very proud to be part of it. And I love hearing the stories of other descendants of these soldiers.
Amazing. Oh, that's awesome. Yes, I accept the invitation. I'm definitely planning to join. Absolutely.
Excellent.
Before we close out, you noted the family Bible that Emma was able to use that, and just the importance. I look at a lot of records when I'm doing research, and family Bibles are always a part. If you're looking in the early 1900s, where they had to go in and they didn't have a birth record, and that was always used. So I was sitting thinking the power of those family Bibles.
Yes.
Wow. Cheryl, in closing, could you please share some parting words of inspiration to our listeners?
Yes, ma'am. And I want to thank you both for this beautiful opportunity. I love your podcast. I learned about it with Ethan, and both of you are so sincere. You are doing the ancestors' work. And I think my parting word to everyone listening is this is not just a hobby. Genealogical work will bless you. And it will change the trajectory of your life. We are not just talking about dead people. We will one day transition as well. Would you like anyone to forget you? Mm-hmm. I know the answer already. You don't. You want right. people to remember your hard work. You want people to know that you were here. You want people to say, this is where Janice did all of her labor. This is where Cherokana worked so hard. Well, it is the same for our ancestors who were forced into slavery. They should have never been relegated to an afterthought. Yep. Our history as people of African descent is complicated. It has highs, but it also has incredible lows. And too many of our ancestors died in complete anonymity. Some of them heroic, some of them just barely made it through, tormented by what they were forced to experience. We owe them just for their survival. We wouldn't be here had they not survived. They bore the brunt and faced down evil. The least we can do is say thank you. The least we can do is speak their names. And a greater thing we can do is resurrect their stories. I have been blessed beyond measure for this work. So many things have happened to me that, and I didn't do it for a blessing. I just wanted to connect the dots. And I am stunned by all the gifts that have unfolded before me because I love those who made me possible. So that's my parting word to your wonderful listeners. Don't forget the bridge that brought you over. I know we got our cars now, we're living in our homes and we got it going on, but there was someone who was bent over in a plantation who made you possible. And when you speak their names, they will speak back to you. And if you want to be truly blessed, more than money, more than all the earthly riches that we love, if you want to be blessed through and through, speak their names and elevate them. And honey, when they elevate you, you are going to know what true joy really is. When they elevate you, they will knock every enemy in your way. You will be like, wait, what? I said this person was coming at me, but somebody shut them down. I don't even know how it happened. I feel right now you can't touch me because I'm surrounded by Sandy and Emma and all the ancestors who I have said, protect me from evil. And they have risen and protected and surrounded me where people come at me with guns blazing and all of a sudden they're hung high and I didn't even have to lift a hand. So if you want to be truly blessed, speak the names who loved you, speak their names, speak their stories, speak with pride. And that's what I take into the schools, because there's one thing I want to see before I transition out of here. I want our children to stop referring to themselves as this filthy N-word.
That's right.
I want that rest. And one of the things I'm going to do when this project is done, I'm going to create the Sandy and Emma Wills Foundation, and I'm going to create genealogy work, use the money to create genealogy workshops in every school. You are not an N-word. Stop substituting the names of your family and friends for this hateful word that these people slapped on our ancestors. It was a lie then. It was a lie now. Stop justifying it. Call yourselves by your true name. That's my goal after this is done. And I will not rest until that N-word is stamped out of existence. That's what it means when you speak the names of your ancestors. And that's what it means to truly live a life worthy of the space that you take up. Amen.
Ooh, amen. Surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses is what I felt. And those witnesses are our ancestors.
Ooh. Amen. Great. Amen indeed. What a wonderful and inspiring and a moving conversation. Cheryl Wills, thank you so much for sharing with us and our listeners. You can find Cheryl Wills on Facebook at facebook.com/CherylDeniseWills, and that's Cheryl with a C. We thank you for joining us, and we look forward to sharing with you during our next segment of Speak On It.
Speak On It is a podcast and is immediately available to listen to at your leisure. We are forever thankful to Bernice Bennett, who hosted research at the National Archives and beyond, for entrusting us to carry on her broadcast legacy through Speak On It. Thank you.